Today is Tuesday, March 15, 2022. This is part three of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Gary Ladd, last name spelled L-A-D-D. This interview is being conducted at the house of Tom Martin here in Flagstaff, Arizona. And good afternoon, Gary. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks, Tom.
Great. Gary, we left off in part two. You had headed out to Kitt Peak with Bill Schoening.
Schoening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Schoening. And that's spelled S-C-H-O-E-N-I-G.
N-I-N-I-N-G.
N-I-N-G. Thank you. Okay. And he knew some river people. Can you pick that story up?
Yes. It was 1968 that Bill and I drove out because he had just taken a job at Kitt Peak. And we were both at that time living in St. Louis. I still had a year of college left to go. Bill had been out of college for a few years, and he had just been hired by the observatory in Tucson. And just for company, I went along, and it was my first exposure to southern Arizona and my first look at Kitt Peak. And I was very impressed and decided pretty quickly after that that's where I wanted to work also. But I still had a year of college left. Bill had been involved with the Sierra Club in St. Louis, and then once again in Tucson, and he met Francois Ladet. Francois was the author of Time and the River Flowing. And Francois mentioned that he was going to do a dory trip through Grand Canyon, and pretty soon Bill was invited to go along. And that was in 1969 for the 100th anniversary of the Powell Expedition. I heard about that trip from Bill, and Bill thought that there was a chance there might be room on another trip later on. So I did go with Bill Schoening and Martin Litton, and Ron Hayes was on that trip, and I think Vladimir Kovalik may have been on that trip that year. And I was blown away by how beautiful the canyon was, and the fantastic side canyons, and the exciting rapids, and that led, oh, I should mention that on that trip there was something that happened that became kind of well known, and that was Crystal Rapid, of course, had not been around very long in its new form in 1970 when I first went, and it was not easy to get around it, so we not easy to get through it, so we unloaded one of the dories and carried it around Crystal, portaged it, and man, that was a lot of work over the boulders. But we did get that one boat, I'm not sure which dory it was, but we did get one boat around the rapid, and then Martin ended up rowing three of the other boats through in the same afternoon, and he flipped every one of them. So this was the famous event where Martin flipped three times in Crystal. And I was not there to see this, but
where were you?
Oh, well, I saw the flips, but something happened during that period that I did not witness, but supposedly Martin would flip a boat and drift into shore somewhere downstream, or maybe be picked up by one of the other boats and walk back upstream and get in another dory and flip that one also. But as he was walking back up, he passed somebody and said, "Pleasant day," and nothing more than that. No reference to what had just happened. Anyway, that was a great trip, and I don't remember a lot about that in detail.
What else do you remember about it? It started at Lee's Ferry,
mm-hmm.
and did it go all the way to Pierce Ferry?
It went all the way to Temple Bar, I
To Temple
believe.
Bar.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you guys get towed out across or did you row out across?
We were towed, yes.
Okay.
We were met by the fellows who had done so many trips in Grand Canyon. I've forgotten their names. Riggs.
The Riggs brothers?
Yeah. I
Okay.
think that's who met us and towed us the rest of the way. Yeah.
With their cruiser, with their Chris Craft kit-built cruiser,
The,
or
these were smaller boats, and there was one or two of them.
okay. And then, do you remember how many boats were on that first trip in 1970?
Not exactly. There was at least one 10-man raft and maybe two,
Okay.
and then at least four dories and maybe as many as six. The submarine was on that trip.
That would be the Flavelle 2.
Flavelle one or two, yeah. There was no name on it at the time.
But that was built by Brick Mortensen, and it had the little ring buoy on the rope you could throw. I don't know if you remember that. It
No.
was pretty flat, didn't have a lot
Yes.
of rocker, and it would sort of plow into waves and
Exactly. Yeah.
okay.
The submarine.
Okay.
Music Temple, the boat, was along Diablo Canyon. Ron Hayes had his Betty Boop.
Okay. Tell me about Ron. What do you remember about him?
Well, he was a great guy, and he had two friends of his from California with him. One of whom I don't remember his name, and the other one I'm struggling right now to remember, Tim Considine. And Tim, I recognized, he had been on a Walt Disney program, part of the Mickey Mouse Club called Spin and Marty. So I was familiar with him, and then he had just finished playing a small part in the movie Patton, when a soldier who has had trouble in the field during combat, and he had been taken out and was in a tent and was suffering from what we would now call PTSD. And Tim Considine played that soldier, and the soldier was slapped by General Patton, and Patton got into a lot of trouble for that. Anyway,
How do you spell Tim's last name?
Considine, he's from a famous acting family. So his father was, I think, John Considine, Considine, I believe.
Okay.
So Ron and Tim Considine and a third fellow were in the Betty Boop. I think the Betty Boop was absolutely brand new that year, but it already had a patch on it that ran up one or both sides towards the bow, an extra layer of plywood that had been kind of feathered into the general shape of the boat. And what had happened was Ron drove up to Oregon. It was a Keith Steele boat, to pick it up, and he had a pickup truck, and it was upside down in the bed of the truck and up on the roof of the truck. And he pulled into a gas station, a standard station, I understand, and the roof there was too low, and it broke the boat.
Oh,
So
wow.
even before he got it home, it had to help have a little help.
And the Betty Boop had a arched bow and stern, didn't it?
Oh, yes, from gunwale to gunwale.
Gunwale to
Yeah.
gunwale, yeah, which would have been a little interesting to build. It would have shedded water well,
Yes.
but it was just an interesting looking boat.
Was very pretty, actually. It was well designed as far as visual lines. But I'm gonna follow a thread here. During that trip, and I think another trip that took place the following year when Bob Horton and I were along from Phantom Ranch downstream, Ron's boat was on that trip also. And during that trip, I thought I was so interested in the dories that I would get one myself. But I had no idea of who I might be able to go with, but Ron and I talked about it, and he said that he would go with me, or we would go together, or we would put together a trip. So later on, that was 1971, in early 72, I moved to Arizona to take the job at Kitt Peak, and one of the things I immediately did was order a hull from Jerry Briggs.
Okay.
That hull was delivered right at the end of the year or the beginning of 1973, and I found room to work on it in a garage, which just had a dirt floor in Tucson that was being rented by Larry Testerman. So partly with Larry's help, but mostly it was up to me. I put all the cabinets in the boat and got it ready to go.
Had you done woodworking before?
Kind of informally, and I had shop classes, and so
okay.
I didn't know what I was doing. But on the other hand, at that time, Martin Litton had a shop in Hurricane, and I drove over there and took pictures as well as I could of the construction of his boats. And right at that same time is when Martin and Jerry Briggs came up with a design that hasn't been changed very much since then. So it became the Grand Canyon Dory by Jerry Briggs. But the arrangement of the cabinets and the seating all appeared on the scene at about that time, and my boat was one of the first Jerry Briggs boats that Martin had ordered.
And this was 18 feet long?
Yeah, 17, 9.5, I think.
Okay.
So I may have mentioned this earlier, but I was talking to Martin about working on the cabinets, and he told me that I could probably finish it in a couple of weekends. Well, I worked on it every night and every weekend for 5 months, with only a few exceptions. So I was kind of slow, but I ended up with a good boat, I think. It became the Tadahatso. And it went on its first trip in 1973. The trip that was supposed to happen with Martin didn't, or with Ron Hayes, did not occur, and I've forgotten what happened there. But I ended up going as part of Martin's group,
okay,
which was kind of semi-commercial at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister, Debbie Ladd, went along, and Larry Testerman went along, and two other friends from Missouri, Jim Huckins, again, and his wife, Kathy Huckins. And I struggled on that trip because I had had very little rowing experience, but did not flip. I did put a hole in the Tadahatso trying to pull out of Havasu.
Okay.
But with the help of some other boatmen, that was fixed overnight. And by the end of the trip, I think I was a real boatman.
Mm-hmm.
But it started out kind of rough.
Tell me more about that trip. How many other boats do you remember? Couple rubber rafts.
Well, I don't remember how many rubber rafts were on that trip, but okay. It was a Wally Rist-led trip.
Okay.
Rich Turner was on that trip also.
Okay. And what do you remember about Wally?
of always smiling and having a good time.
Okay. Nice. And what do you remember about Rich?
Don't tell Rich, but I hardly remember his is participating in that trip.
Okay.
Also, there was one other person who now lives here in Flagstaff at the time. At the time, he lived in Tucson, an astronomer, but he ended up working at Lowell for a long time here in Flagstaff, Wes Lockwood.
Okay.
So Wes was on the trip, and a couple of other astronomers, I think from Washington State.
And so you towed your boat, trailered it up from Tucson?
Yes. Trailered it up to a campground south of the South Rim, one that's not very far north of Williams, and spent the night and then met, actually I'm not sure if we met any of the other party there, but drove by the South Rim.
Okay.
And then on to Lee's Ferry and met Jim and Kathy Huckins.
Okay.
And then they had a friend that had driven out from Missouri with them who used my car while we were on the river. And then he met us at the end of the river trip. And I'm not sure where that was at that time.
Probably Temple Bar maybe again.
Could have been Temple Bar again.
Okay. But at one point, Martin started taking out on the north side of Lake Mead to shortcut up to Hurricane.
Yeah, I was never involved in a trip that ended there.
Okay, all right.
But I should go on to mention at this point that eventually, this was my first trip in the Tadahat, so it was 1973, but Jim DeVinny, who was a friend of Bill Shaning's at Kitt Peak, and Bill and I and Jim started doing backpacking trips together. Jim was also interested in the Dories, and he had been on one of Martin's trips, and he and Larry Testerman bought a hull from Jerry Briggs. Now, after a little while, it was decided that that arrangement would not work. That hull ended up going to Jim DeVinny. It had cabinets in it, but it was not finished. Did not have hatch covers, for instance. Was unpainted. But Jim DeVinny and Bill Shaning worked on it, and it became the Nonnezoshe dory. Nonnezoshi. I believe it's Paiute for Rainbow Bridge.
Okay.
Larry wanted to have his own dory, and I was talking to Ron Hayes, and Ron said he was not using the Betty Boop anymore and that he would sell it to us. So Larry and I drove to Southern California and met Ron and purchased the Betty Boop.
Okay.
Which was in very bad shape. It had been sitting outside and maybe at one time had been under a tarp, but at least when we first saw it, it was, the paint was all cracked and messed up and the wood was splitting to some degree. So we towed it back to Tucson and Larry ended up, well, the two of us worked on it for several months. And it became the Great Thumb. Now, the Great Thumb made a trip in 1975. Jim DeVinny and the Nonnezoshe and myself and the Tadahatso and Larry Testerman and the Great Thumb and 10 other people, 13 of us total, did a 32-day trip through the Grand Canyon. Just a fantastic experience. It was in the middle of summer. It was really hot, but we stopped and saw everything our heart desired.
This is 1976?
This is 75.
Okay. Can we back up for a minute to your first river trip with your boat, the Tadahatsu?
Right.
What happened at Havasu that put a hole in it?
I just failed to pull out fast enough. And
you have to go quite a ways out, yes. Otherwise you go through a rock field there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I ended up going through the rocks.
Okay. And then put a hole in the floor of the boat?
Yes.
Okay. So that required the boat had to get pulled out of the water.
Yes.
And then dried out a little bit and then patched with fiberglass? A piece of wood or?
Fiberglass never was allowed to touch the Tadahatsu, so it was Marine Tex that we patched it with. Marine Tex, I don't know what the original use was supposed to be, but the advertising went something like this: hard as iron or nails, soft enough to be sanded, fine enough to be sawn. So it was kind of like a wood.
Okay.
In some ways.
Like a wood dough, like a wood putty. Almost.
Yeah, it was a mixture you had to put together on the river.
Okay.
And it would heat up, get kind of
like
warm.
An epoxy resin
an
type.
Epoxy, yeah.
Okay. And with wood particle in it.
Not sure about that, but. Okay. But you could saw it afterwards, sure enough. And the hole on my boat wasn't really so much a hole. It was just the plywood had split, kind of like a door opening. So at one end, it was hinged, kind of. And at the other end, it was broken pretty badly.
Okay.
So it was like a flap that never quite opened.
Okay.
So we put a quarter inch layer of plywood on top of it and strengthened the rib that was close by, which may have been broken, and then covered it with epoxy on the inside of and the outside, and we were good to go, and I don't believe it actually leaked. The Marine Tex can't flex very well, so it will crack, which it did eventually. But it was a good river patch anyway.
Okay.
Also on that trip, House Rock Rapid, I think, was brand new at that time, 1973.
Okay.
And I almost did not get through there. And then the other, I really didn't have any trouble at Crystal, and I didn't, except for being thrown about, I didn't really have much trouble at Lava. I think I may have ended up in a different part of the boat by the time I came out the bottom, but I didn't get thrown out, and the boat didn't flip, so that was good enough.
Okay.
But Horn Creek was kind of exciting. We ran it on the right, and Jim and Kathy were sitting in the front seat. My sister Debbie and Larry were in the back, and I got into a fast stretch of current headed right for the left wall. And I was doing everything I could to avoid hitting it. Jim and Kathy were not convinced that I was going to avoid it, and they actually got up and started running to the back of the boat.
Wow.
So, but I did not hit it. Larry says it was only a paint thickness between the bow of the boat and the Vishnu group rocks. But anyway, right now, I don't remember any other incidents in Rapids.
And that was a do-it-yourself trip or a private trip, it sounds like.
So the 73 trip was with Martin's group.
That was with Martin.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. That was with Wally and with Rich.
That's right.
Okay, so I'm getting my trips confused. Got it. Okay.
Let me continue on with a little bit more about the Great Thumb.
Okay.
The Great Thumb was used in 75.
And on the 32-day trip.
That's right, yep. And then We did not go again until 1983.
Okay. So in that case, wait, back up. Tell me more about the 1975 river trip. 32 days in the summer. This was before the 1979 Colorado River Management Plan, which would only let summer trips go for 18 days. So that sounds hot, but lovely.
It was wonderful.
Did you resupply anywhere? Did you have any arrangements with anyone to bring you any fresh produce, or how did that work?
We had canned goods, mostly, brought in to Phantom Ranch by mule.
Oh.
Which we picked up there. I don't think we had any fresh food brought in. Also, prior to that trip, just to make sure we knew what we were doing, because really, all three of us as boatmen were very inexperienced. Larry had close to zero experience rowing the Great Thumb. I had a couple of trips, but I hadn't done that much rowing, and Jim probably even less than I did. We decided that just as a tryout, we would put in at Diamond Creek and float downstream, and we also put a cache of food in there just as in case we got into desperate straits right at the end. And
was that earlier in 1975 that you did the Diamond Down trip?
Yes.
Okay, and how did that go?
It went fine. We didn't have any trouble, and we just had two boats. I don't think Larry's boat was ready yet.
Okay.
Anyway, it was the Tata Hatso and one other boat, and we had some observatory people with us again from work, and that was not a problem. We did fine.
Okay. So did you have a permit for the 32-day trip in 75?
Yes.
Was that your permit? Were you the permit holder?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we filled out all of those forms in great detail, which apparently no one was even reading at the Park Service.
Okay. So a 32-day trip in the summer of 1975 meant that just about all the other trips that launched for quite a while after you passed you. Unless everybody else was going terribly slow.
No, we had some commercial trips that passed us several times.
They were doing laps while you guys were slowly moving along.
Yes.
Okay, all right. And they just say, how you doing? Everything going okay? And off they'd go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
The Great Thumb flipped twice on that trip. Ruby and also Lava.
Okay.
And I may not be able to get through this, but at the end of that trip, I made up a little poem, which Larry Testerman never appreciated, in reference to what happened to him in those two rapids. There was a young dory named Thumb, whose passenger seemed to be glum. After Lava and Ruby, they said, 'twould be groovy to ride in a boat through some. And
okay.
Larry got even with me by a limerick about the Tata Hatso, perhaps making a reference to the not-so-hatso, but I don't remember exactly how that one goes.
Well, I see. It's very clever.
We thought so at the time.
Yeah. What else about the 75 trip do you recall?
We just had a great time. We even hiked up to more or less below 140 mile arch. Not too many people do that. Mm-mm. In the summer, that's a killer
it's
hike.
It's way hot.
Just about killed us. Yeah.
Brushy, and you got to climb up these little waterfalls again and again and again, and stinking hot in there.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Also, at that time, at Thunder River, I don't know how often this is done today, but you can climb up and climb around a corner and get into the cave. And all, I believe all of us, if not all, almost all of us did that.
Okay.
And, I don't think any of us would do it today. I'm not sure how many people are doing it today.
The young and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose idea was it to go for 32 days?
Whose idea was that?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it was mostly mine and Larry's, but Jim may have been equally involved. Yeah.
Okay.
We all wanted to see as much of the canyon as possible.
Nice. So I'm assuming you did some layover days where you went nowhere and did nothing.
That's true.
Except
yes.
Hiked a lot.
Yes.
Okay.
Not all, I think there were three layover days, and not all of them were scheduled. We just had room for 3 days. So one of them occurred at Last Chance above Havasu.
Okay.
Just to take a break.
Hmm.
And also at the 114 mile camps, the upper one, the Garnet camps.
Okay.
I think we were at the upper one, or maybe it was a lower one. Anyway, the water went way down. It went down a long ways in that narrow section.
Oh, wow.
And the Nonososhi ended up on top of a cliff.
Okay.
And we decided rather than try to get it down from there, we would just take a layover day.
Tell me about that, because that's something that later river runners from basically the 1990s on forward, after the Grand Canyon Protection Act, told Reclamation that they had to regulate their up and down at the dam, at Glen Canyon Dam. What were your flows like day after day after day coming out of the dam?
I really don't remember, but they were not terribly high and not terribly low.
Okay.
You know, I would say 17 or 18,000 for a high and 8,000 for a low.
Okay.
That's a guess, but
okay.
Nothing extraordinary.
All right.
Actually, the 8,000 may be too high, so perhaps lower than that, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you put the Nonososhi on a ledge, that would have been quite a drop there. So maybe 6 feet? No, 6,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember,
know.
But
okay.
I'm just saying, I don't think we were as low as 3 ever. And I don't think we were above 20,000 ever.
Okay.
So.
And that was every day, that up and down?
Yeah, that's where I remember it.
Okay.
Okay, here's another thing that happened on that trip. We were camped at Lower Quaggant at a campsite that doesn't exist anymore. It's been taken over by vegetation.
Mm.
So on the right side, and there's a big eddy there. And Martin used to use that camp, and we used it for our trip. And in the middle of the night, let's say at about 2 or 3 o'clock, I woke up and looked down at the beach, and in the darkness, I could only make out 2 boats. And I got up, and what I had seen turned out to be true. There were only 2 boats there. And out in the river was my boat, the Tadahatsu, going around the eddy.
Wow.
I woke Larry up, and the two of us got in the Great Thumb and captured the Tadahatsu before it took off and went on downstream by itself.
Wow.
So that was a close call.
What luck is that?
Yeah, and we do not understand how that boat got loose.
Okay.
And later on, of course, we would tie the boats together, but at that time, we didn't know that technique.
Okay. Okay. Wow, that was fortunate.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That could have been bad in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you all have to pile on what you can and go down and look for it. And, you know,
hope that
it was just around the corner, and the next day he went around and around.
The Ta-Nehisi getting loose, by the way, is just another indication of how those huge fluctuations in river level created havoc on the river, because we had to pull the boats up a long ways.
When the water went up.
Right, anticipating what was going to happen later in the night.
Ah, so would you actually pull them out of the river and work them up the beach?
Yep.
And then tie them off to something? And
yes.
Okay, and then the water would come up?
Yes.
In the night, and your boats would be floating.
Yep, at certain places in the canyon, that's the way it was working. Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yes.
The water would drop out, and in the morning you'd have to get your boats back to the water.
Yep.
Which almost might be easier, depending on where they were perched, than dragging them up.
Right.
Yeah. Dragging down, drag one way or the other. That was a lot of boat moving.
Another thing that happened... Not so much because of fluctuating water levels, but we were on a trip one time after the river had flooded and left a layer of mud on the sand, and we could not get the boat to stay on the sand. We'd pull it up, and it would slide right back down into the river.
Wow.
You had to tie them up, even though they weren't in the water.
Oh, my. Because they just take off.
Yes.
Huh.
Just slicker than heck.
Did you guys have sand stakes at the time? Those
no.
pieces of aluminum that people pound into the sand with a hammer?
No.
No. Okay. What kind of river guide did you have at the time? Was there, and now there's, you know, six different brands of river guides. And
I think it was the Belknap guide, but we also had...
Okay.
Bucketheads,
yep.
Scroll map.
Yep.
I'm not sure. I don't think we use that very much.
Okay.
And also, Larry, Jim, and I spent a lot of time with Rich and Wally in Phoenix. We spent an entire weekend going over everything in the canyon. Where the good camps were, what to watch out for in the rapids, how to run certain rapids, everything. They were very generous in
nice.
Helping us get started since we were so inexperienced.
Okay, very nice. So where to camp, things to look at rapids, just...
Everything.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would have been very helpful. I think as well, getting that kind of data. Les Jones made a scroll map. Of course, his nickname was Buckethead. And the scroll map was tough because you'd have to roll it and roll it and roll
yes.
it and roll it and roll it and roll it to finally get to where you were.
Yeah.
And the Belknap guide, you could just kind of flip it open halfway and open it up and know you're a couple pages off and find the page you needed pretty quickly.
Yes.
But neither one of those had scout locations for rapids.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Or campsites called out. You were just not with the map, and there you were. So that getting the beta from Rich and Wally, that would seem to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's, we depended upon the information they gave us tremendously.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Was this... before the monsoon or during the monsoon?
I think 75 trip, I think, started in early June. We had little or no rain at the beginning of the trip, but right at the end, when we were down to Separation Canyon, we had almost a full day of rain and a down canyon wind. And we rode 50 miles the last day.
Wow.
We were helped by the conditions.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yes.
And then did you arrange a tow out across the lake at the time?
I don't remember. No.
Okay.
We rode the lake, but I can't tell you.
So you might have taken out a Pierce then?
Might have taken out a Pierce, yeah.
Okay. Which was becoming way more popular to take out than Temple Bar.
Yeah, we did not.
At one point, there was a shift there.
We did not go to Temple Bar for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it was probably Pierce Ferry. And for that pre-trip trip, the one that started at Diamond Creek, we probably took out there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And if it didn't have the wind to your back, you would have to row across Lake Mead as it had backed into Grand Canyon. And that it'd be pretty flat water, so it's a lot of rowing. Yeah. Okay. What else do you remember about that? Those river trips. We'll talk about 1983 later. But this, you know, 73, 70,
75 was the long
75
one.
75 was the long one. Yep. And you mentioned that you had a couple of boats turn over there on the 32 trip. How did that happen? Was that just, you know, odd wave and over the boat goes, or?
Well, lava, you know, lots of ways to have it happen there.
Yes.
Ruby, I don't know. I don't remember. But it was, in both cases, it was Larry and the Great Thumb.
Okay.
And Larry, at that time, was a big fan of lots of beer.
Ah.
So the decks, which were arched up boards over the gunnels, helped to accommodate larger things for us in the dories. And it included a huge amount of beer.
Mm.
And we had, all three boats were absolutely packed. Every cubic inch was being utilized. And I always felt that the Keith Steele boat, Larry's boat, was more unstable because the higher center of gravity. But there's more to the story about the Great Thumb, which I can continue with now or mention it later.
Now's fine, since we're talking about it.
Okay.
Unless it goes into 83. Is it pertinent to these trips?
Yes. Well, let me just mention one thing, and then we'll come back to 83 later.
Okay.
I always felt like Larry's boat was more unstable.
Hmm.
But Brad Demick, who ended up revitalizing the Great Thumb, which, again, was returned to the name Betty Boop. He worked on it, fixed it all up, and they did some trials in it in Glen Canyon upstream from Lee's Ferry. And in his opinion, it was more stable than a Briggs boat.
Hmm.
So I don't know. Larry was a little guy, and we had to modify the boat to fit his small stature.
Okay.
And we may not have done it in the best way.
Okay.
Or it could be just a matter of luck. You know, sometimes you flip and sometimes you don't.
So how many of you were on the 1975 river trip?
13 of us.
In three boats?
In three boats, yeah.
Oh, wow. So that's a lot of people and not a lot of room.
Five in the two Briggs boats and each of the two Briggs boats and three in Larry's boat.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot. Those are heavy. Lots of gear for 30 days worth. Well, at least you had some stuff coming in at Phantom. At that time, do you remember 1975? Were you sinking your cans in the river, or were you crushing them and taking them out?
We were taking them out, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. And were you taking out your solid waste as well at the time?
No.
Okay.
Martin taught us a bad habit at the time, and we were instructed to go far up into the rocks.
Okay.
And there was not a single designated area, and we burned our toilet paper. And that, as far as I know, actually worked fairly well for those times.
Okay.
We did not hammer some small area, and it got distributed. But we did have a couple of incidents, or I think on the 75 trip, one incident where a toilet paper fire started. And it happened just upstream from Kanab. And I don't remember the exact dimensions, but I would say an area 15 feet wide and 50 feet long going up the slope on the right-hand side of the river was burned.
Okay.
Although you could hardly tell it unless you could look closely
right.
for ashes and burned twigs.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. You wouldn't think there'd be that much to burn there.
Yeah.
Maybe some tamarisks, but outside of that.
Yeah, it was just the grasses and small bushes. Yeah.
Okay. And how did you just drink right out of the river?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah. That's something that Martin did, and we did too. We all okay. had our Sierra Club cups, and we dipped water right out of the river, although for lunch and for dinner, we always mixed up some kind of Kool-Aid.
Okay.
So we could have some kind of flavor. And we didn't have any trouble with getting sick.
Okay.
32 days down there drinking straight out of the river, never yep. a problem.
Right. Cool. What? Were you doing fires? Were you cooking right on the beach?
Once again, we kind of followed Martin's lead. Bill Sheening made a stove, which was no more than a metal plate with legs.
Okay.
And then a foldable walls to the stove. That allowed us to have a fire that was about a foot below a grill.
Okay.
And then a grill that went on top of that foldable section. And we collected firewood as we went down the river.
Okay.
And that was piled into a boat and then put on shore at our camps.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did cheat a little bit by picking up wood that probably should have been left where we found it at camp, but most of it was picked up along the way.
Okay.
And then in the mornings, we took the grill off, took the sides off, and then two people grabbed the legs of the stove and carried it down to the river and dumped the ashes in.
Okay. Nice. So the stove had almost like a, it was almost like a can. The fire was almost like in a square, in a cube without the top.
Right.
If I understand this. Okay. So that was nice.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
just, you know, dump into a room, then it was that. You didn't have to leave it on the beach.
Nope. We never did that.
Okay. Do you remember the condition of the beaches at the time? Were other people shifting into stoves, or were people still having fires on the beach?
I don't think there was much of that.
Okay.
There might be one or two exceptions. Like, I think Bass Camp was kind of ashy.
Okay.
But the beaches mostly were in very good shape, except that we did not pay, I'm not saying us, I'm just saying the river community, not our river trip. We just didn't pay as much attention to micro trash at that time.
Okay.
So I suspect that there was more micro trash in 1975.
Okay.
But the beaches were not trashy.
Hmm.
You know, it depended on where you camped.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember ever pulling in anywhere and just going, oh my God, what a mess this is,
right.
like it is on Lake Powell. Which is so many beaches are fouled. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So nothing like Lake Powell. And I also have to say there's the river section that's below the dam, but above Lee's Ferry. And those beaches are really trashy also, even though volunteers regularly go down there and try to clean it up, but they are really abused. So there's this dividing line at Lee's Ferry where upstream people are really careless and downstream they are really careful.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Huge difference.
Huh. Yeah, because today it's, you know, microtrash, solid waste, fire pans, but you have to carry out your ash. You know, don't dump it in the river. You know, it's just, there's a whole, looking back, we've learned a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, the further back you go, closer to when the river didn't have a dam and could run up really high and just recycle everything.
Yeah.
And take it on down river, you know, replenish the beaches. Hmm. What else do you remember about those trips from the 1970s that are kind of different from today?
I'm not sure I can come up with anything more that's different other than to say in the intervening years between 75 and 83, when we did not do any Grand Canyon trips, we were on the San Juan, or we sometimes were able to get permission to either have the Bureau or someone take boats, our dories, down through the tunnel at the dam.
Hmm.
And we launched at the launch ramp that was there until 83.
Oh, interesting.
And then spend 3 days just floating that 15 miles down to Lee's Ferry.
That sounds lovely.
It was lovely, that's right.
And,
we did that a number of times, including the spring of 83 after I had moved to Page, not knowing that that launch ramp was about to come to an end with the high water of 83.
Wow. Okay. All right.
But we were on the San Juan, and in 82, we did a Cataract Canyon trip.
Okay.
And also, starting in 76, I started rowing Lake Powell in my dory, usually, or half the time, by myself.
Hmm.
And I don't remember if I've covered any of that or not.
No, but you haven't. So we've been going a little over 50 minutes. Maybe, because the next thing I'd like to do with this is talk about Kitt Peak. And that seems to have happened before 75.
Well, for me, 72 to 76.
Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to kind of talk about that before we move on then to Cataract or the San Juan trips or rowing Lake Powell.
Okay.
In 1970, if that sounds like a plan.
Sure.
So maybe we ought to put a comma here at this point with part three. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this time frame and these topics?
No.
Okay. Cool. Well, with that then, let's conclude part three of Grand Canyon Oral History with Gary Ladd. Today is Tuesday, March 15th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin. Gary, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.